Penguin Random House Audio presents Changeable, How Collaborative Problem Solving Changes Lives at Home, at School, and at Work. This is the author, J. Stuart Ablon, PhD. Please note that there is a PDF associated with this program, which includes visual content from the pages of the book. For the full experience, please download this file from your digital retailer prior to listening. To my pride and joy, Paige, Carter, and Jack. Author's note. I have changed the names and other identifying details of many of the people represented in the stories in this book so as to protect their identities. The stories are real. Introduction. You're in a psychiatric hospital, face to face with a seriously ill patient who won't comply with the rules and who hasn't been taking his meds. His cheeks are turning red. His voice is rising. He's getting agitated. What do you do? This patient is delusional. He hears voices and thinks people are out to get him. He has a history of violence, having injured or killed people. He's physically bigger than you. How do you react? Staff at the Oregon State Hospital in Salem, Oregon, face scenarios like this every day. The hospital is a massive 1,300-bed institution that houses some of Oregon's sickest, most violent patients, including many who have been deemed criminally insane. If you saw the movie adaptation of Ken Kesey's classic book, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, then you know the Oregon State Hospital. The movie was filmed on its grounds, and some of its staff appeared as extras. Make no mistake, the Oregon State Hospital is every bit as intimidating as the film portrays it. To enter or exit, you traverse a series of checkpoints with locked steel doors. Cameras are everywhere. Even the bathrooms for visitors are high security. They're prison toilets, with nothing you can rip off or otherwise use as a weapon. For years, staff at the Oregon State Hospital responded to challenging behavior by cracking down. Sometimes they had no choice but to physically restrain patients, burly staff members pouncing on them and putting them in chokeholds. Other times they locked patients in padded seclusion rooms for hours, or they took away privileges, docking patients the points for good behavior that they needed to enjoy perks like movies or snacks. If you think such measures produced a peaceful, harmonious, healing environment, you're wrong. Oregon State Hospital has a dark history of abuse of patients and of patient attacks against staff. A 2014 survey found that a quarter of the staff had been physically assaulted by a patient in the past year, and only 54% felt safe in their job. Some unhappy staff members went so far as to post on Facebook pictures of gruesome wounds sustained at the hands of patients. Hoping to improve conditions, staff on certain units embarked on a radical experiment, one that seemed foolhardy and even dangerous. They started being nicer. When the challenging behavior arose, they didn't crack down. Instead, they approached patients and, in a calm and orderly fashion, tried to talk through the problem without imposing a solution. They also changed how they thought about challenging behavior. Rather than assuming that patients had willfully acted out and broken the rules, they chose to believe that patients would behave well if they could, and that they weren't behaving well because they weren't capable of it. They lacked various cognitive skills related to the solving of problems. With this baseline of empathy, staff tried to investigate patients' points of view more deeply, understanding what underlying concerns had prompted their challenging behavior, while also articulating their own concerns. They hypothesized that traditional punishments had probably sparked many violent outbursts in the past, provoking patients and causing their emotions to escalate. Dispensing with these punishments and engaging in dialogue, they hoped to resolve conflicts more peacefully, in ways that would satisfy patients and staff alike. You can understand why this approach might have seemed soft. Maybe talking it through would work with relatively healthy patients, but how could you conduct a calm, rational conversation with someone who's psychotic and potentially violent? What if the patient couldn't handle the conversation? What if he blew up? As one staff member at the hospital told me, when you have a 6'4", 275-pound patient lose it, people have a real risk of being hurt. It turns out that you can resolve conflicts with challenging people using so-called softer techniques. One middle-aged patient, whom I'll call Jim, had a history of paranoid schizophrenia. He experienced frequent delusions, believing that the FBI was beaming thoughts into his brain and that people around him could read his thoughts. Having gone off his medication, he was paranoid and refused to interact with others. He wouldn't attend therapy sessions at the hospital, complaining that staff and patients were reading his thoughts. He just didn't trust them, he said. Instead of forcing Jim to comply, a nurse approached him to discuss his behavior. "Hey," the nurse said, "I've noticed you haven't been going in for treatment. I'm wondering why." Initially, the question prompted a superficial answer, but after 3 or 4 tries and a lot of reassurance, the nurse uncovered his concern. People could read his thoughts. "That sounds kind of scary," the nurse said, imagining how she would feel if everyone could read her every thought. She then articulated her concern. The patient needed treatment if he was to get better. Instead of demanding that he comply with his treatment plan, she asked him how they might solve the problem so as to address both of their concerns. In truth, she was skeptical that talking the problem through would resolve the situation, but the patient had an idea. "What if I were to put tinfoil on my head?" "Huh?" In a way, it made sense. As the patient explained, other people read his mind through radio waves. But in his delusional state, he thought that a metallic substance like tinfoil blocked the waves. If he wore tinfoil over his head, nobody would be able to read his thoughts, and he'd feel safe. The nurse wasn't sure about that solution. She thought the tinfoil might distract other patients in group therapy sessions. Yet again, the patient came up with a solution. He could put a thin layer of tinfoil over his head and then mask it by wearing a baseball hat. None of the other patients would even know. Although certainly unorthodox, the solution worked for both of them. The patient was allowed to wear tinfoil under a baseball hat, and he willingly attended his therapy sessions. Problem solved. Potentially violent altercation avoided. Instead of inflicting more trauma on the patient by punishing him, the conversation engendered trust between him and the staff member. Jim and his nurse had worked out their difficulties together. Through countless daily instances such as this one, individual units at Oregon State Hospital have begun to see improvements. Across all units where this approach has been introduced, the use of seclusions dropped by 34% per year and restraints by 40%. Injuries to patients and staff declined by 24% and 12%, respectively. On one unit, acts of aggression among patients plummeted more than 70%. Staff members have described the change as palpable, observing that the hospital is transforming into a more humane and compassionate place. "It used to be cool to treat patients here like shit," one staff member told me, "but it wasn't any longer. The new approach was making it cool to be nice to patients." A patient related how much he liked this new approach as well, noting that, "People in this unit really are actually trying to talk to me." An everyday alternative to tough love. All of us encounter people in our daily lives who don't do what we'd like them to. Our kids act out, or our employees come in late to work. We have a dispute with a customer service representative on the phone, or the friend, or the spouse, or the total stranger standing in line at the grocery store. In these situations, we can feel tempted to respond aggressively and assert our authority, even if we don't actually possess any. We might threaten the other person with a consequence, or we might offer an incentive in exchange for compliance. Either way, we try to assert our will. Seldom do we take the time to hear the other person out, to empathize with his or her concerns, and to work out a solution that leaves everyone satisfied. Our institutions don't apply empathy very often either. Discipline in America has long proceeded on the assumption that people behave in challenging ways on purpose. It follows that to make offenders want to behave well, we must take steps to reward good behavior and punish bad behavior. Our homes, schools, prisons, mental health facilities, and workplaces all operate according to the notion that we can motivate people to behave by manipulating them using rewards and punishment.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?